Hello, everybody, and welcome to the final podcast where we talk about the Black diasporic experience. All right, so let's get right into it. Today's topic is none other than Black women and the way that we have existed at the intersections of race, gender, and class in a racialized, patriarchal class of society. And this has forced us to engage in constant acts of revolution throughout history just to survive, just to make it to the next day. Through our bottom-rung position in a hierarchical society, introspection has given Black women insights that allow us to best survive the world that we live in, which requires acts of resistance constantly. And therefore, Black women's continued existence is an act of revolution, and every Black woman is a revolutionary. Now, I know that might be like a broad statement to make. Every Black woman is a revolutionary, McKinley, even those of us who don't actively engage in revolution. Yes, absolutely. Even those of us who don't actively engage in revolution, because little do you know, you are actively engaging in revolution just by being alive, just by being yourself. But hear me out, because I do have points to back it up. The first of those points being, like I said, Black women have lived at the intersections of race, gender, and class since the beginnings of America and throughout history since then. I remember in the beginning of AAAS, we talked a lot about how Black women were not only physical laborers, you know, or field laborers. We were sexual laborers as well. And this was really quite a surprise to me. Well, I guess it wasn't necessarily a surprise, but it was an interesting topic to engage in because in all my discussions about slavery, that had never come up and that had never occurred to me either. And so that got me thinking. So basically, there was literally a law and it said that whatever was the status of the mother, the child shall follow. So if the mother was a slave, the child was going to be a slave. And this law, therefore, put Black women, that it made us responsible. It deemed us responsible for birthing the next generation of slaves. And me, myself, I couldn't imagine. That is a very heavy burden to bear, just knowing that you will be responsible for, you know, the continued degradation of your people just by reproducing, you know? Yeah, it's definitely a heavy place to be in. But we also looked at a bit of a case study as well. It was a memoir by Harriet Jacobs, and it was one of the first slave narratives from a Black woman, because a lot of them at the time had been written by Black men, but this one was one of the first ones written by a Black woman. And Harriet Jacobs, her story is incredible. Her struggle for freedom and survival literally permeated every aspect of her life and every decision that she made. And it did, because she knew that she was vulnerable as a woman and as a Black person. Like, those two things in society at this time, like, separately, those two things are, you know, you don't necessarily want to be. But then together, you put those together, and that is a heavy burden to bear. And so, as a child, she had to, like, constantly fight off the advances of her master, who wanted Harriet to submit to him sexually. But no, she constantly fought him off. She constantly fought off his advances because she knew her worth, and she knew that it was wrong. And she refused to, you know? And she didn't let the power dynamic between them decide her fate, which a lot of people would think that you would buckle under a situation like that. You have this person who has supposedly so much power over you and the power over your life, and literally could decide moment to moment whether you die or you live. But she didn't let that decide her fate. You know, she still stood her ground and she still refused to submit to him, which takes an incredibly strong mind, an incredibly strong will. In another instance, she had to let go of the love she felt for a fellow slave, a man, in order to protect herself. And she instead chose to be with a white man who could offer her some, you know, reprieve from her master's advances, who could offer her some sort of safety, even if that safety was totally dependent upon the context of the time, you know. She even had to watch her kids grow up through a hole in an attic wall because she would rather be confined to solitude and madness than to live as a slave, which is absolutely incredible and admirable. So we have Harriet Jacobs. She is absolutely a revolutionary. She even ran away from slavery. That was a revolutionary thing to do at that time because you are literally actively engaging against the system that says this is what you are and this is all that you will ever be. Now, another example, we have Joan Little and the rape of Joan Little in the 1970s. So in the 1970s, Joan Little had to kill a white guard who was in the process of raping her. And there are so many different power dynamics that are going on here at one time. So you've got man over woman, you've got white over black, imprisoned over free. And she was even facing the death penalty for defending herself. But Joan Little, being the revolutionary black woman that she was, she knew that the power the guard had over her was no match for her own inner strength. And the fact that she had a power of her own. She had the power to survive, which is an amazing power to have in a world like this. Which brings us to our second point. And the second point is that through introspection, Black women have historically understood their place in society. And we have specific insights into society as a whole that are integral to the creation of a more just and equitable future. And what I mean by that is, when you're at the bottom, you can see the truth of society more clearly, because looking up, you can see there's nothing below you. So like looking up, you can see the truth of everything. You can see what's missing. You can see what's wrong. Another example of that could be like when the foot is on your neck, you can feel the true weight of that foot. You feel just how heavy it is. You know what I'm saying? And I think that that is the position that Black women are in, and Black women of all walks of life, you know, not just, you know, Black women in the workforce, a traditional job, or Black women who are married, but Black women of all walks of life, prostitutes, crackheads, trans Black women, Black women, just Black women who could inhabit every single space that we can possibly inhabit. We know the truth of the society that we live in, because whatever space that we enter in, we are entering it as the bottom, at the bottom rung. And so looking up, you can see the truth of the world that you live in, because A, you don't really have a reason to lie about it. There's none of these systems that you want to keep going because you're not benefiting from any of them. So a lot of times we see like Black men will actively struggle against racism, but on the other hand will perpetuate patriarchy. And so like Black women, we don't have a patriarchy to perpetuate. You know what I'm saying? Everything, all of the weight that society can put on a single person, Black women from all walks of life have experienced. And so what I mean by we have insights into society that are integral to the creation of a more just and equitable future. If you want to know what is wrong with the world, if you want to know what is wrong with the society that you live in, talk to a Black woman, because she will be able to tell you all the ways in which the foot is on her neck, right? And so if you know the truth about all of that, then if you know the full weight of the foot, then you know just how much of it you need to take off. So that's what I mean by the truth of society, and that we have specific insights into society as a whole that are integral to the creation of a more just and equitable future. I truly believe that, and I stand by that. So I also have some examples to back that up. And to start off, like, the voices of Black women have really largely been ignored in mainstream social justice movements. Historically, and even now, and most anti-racism movements have been fueled by misogyny, as Black women do the logistical and clerical work while Black men are the faces of the movement. And so because of this, we have had the need for like Black women to convene separately from Black men to establish what they felt was lacking from the movement and what they needed in their lives. Hence the need for movements like the Combahee River Collective. And let me tell you something about the Combahee River Collective. I love these ladies with everything in me. Every time I read their statement, I am just honestly floored and in awe of the revolutionary spirit. If you want to talk about revolutionary Black women, these women embody it wholeheartedly. So the statement that the Combahee River Collective comes out and says, "The most general statement of our politics at the present time will be that we are actively committed to struggling against racial, sexual, heterosexual, and class oppression, and see as our particular task the development of integrated analysis and practice based upon the fact that the major systems of oppression are interlocking, and that the synthesis of these oppressions creates the conditions of our lives. As Black women, we see Black feminism as a logical political movement to combat the manifold and simultaneous oppressions that all women of color face." That is just powerful. And to think that they were thinking like this so ahead of their time in the 70s, it's just crazy to me. Like, we are still trying to get people today to take up these, to take up this stance, you know, to see and to understand that if you're going to struggle against something, don't go halfway. Struggle against it all. Class, sexual oppression, heterosexual oppression, racial oppression. Don't stop halfway. Don't stop at racial oppression, because it's more to that. Black women understand through introspection, Black women understand that all of these oppressions are interlocking and that they connect, and that intersectionality is real, and that it doesn't really get much more intersectional than the lives of Black women. So some further examples could be like Ella Baker. We watched a whole documentary about the Ella Baker, and it was incredibly interesting because, to be honest with you, before this documentary, I thought Ella Baker was a singer, and I felt, honestly, I felt so ashamed to know that she was such a prominent head in like the civil rights movement, and I never ever knew about it. But the story of Ella Baker, she was literally being ignored as a leader and a visionary that she was in the civil rights movement, all because people like Martin Luther King were getting all the glory, all because she was a woman and they didn't want to listen to her, even though she had literally mentored Martin Luther King and people of that nature. And I just found that incredibly interesting. And even now, like, Black lesbian women are the creators of the BLM movement. And we know how big BLM is. We know that every time something goes down that shouldn't have went down, we're screaming at the top of our lungs, Black Lives Matter. Because that's a powerful statement. Black Lives Matter is extremely powerful. And it makes sense to me that it would have come from none other than Black women. So that brings us to point three, which is the continued striving and survival of Black women require constant acts of resistance in order to live the fullest lives that society will allow us to live at the time in which we are living. And these acts of resistance shift and change as society changes, but the core remains that acts of resistance are essential to the survival of each and every Black woman. I once heard that the personal is political, and that has definitely resonated with me ever since, and it definitely resonates in these next points that I make. So modern day acts of resistance to me definitely include things like the natural hair movement, because that right there is millions of Black women simultaneously rejecting Western beauty standards. It might just be hair to some people, but Black women know the weight that hair carries, for we have been the butt end of every single bad hair joke. And people actively distance themselves from Blackness and from Black hair just to avoid being in proximity and being related to Blackness. So Black women physically embracing Blackness in such an obvious way is definitely an act of revolution, even if we don't mean it to be. Even if in your head as a Black woman, you're like, well, I'm not trying to make any statements, I just like the way it looks. You're still making a statement, because the personal is political. And the statement you're making is, I am Black, I am woman, and I am proud to be both, which is a pretty revolutionary statement to make. Another modern day act of resistance could be like getting educated. That's definitely an act of resistance to me, especially since right now Black women are the most educated group in America by race and gender currently. Education was an act of resistance for the slaves, and it still is an act of resistance for us. Despite the heavy foot on our necks, Black women are still seeking knowledge, knowledge of self, knowledge of the world, and how to make it better for our loved ones. Everyday living is resistance for Black women. With so many forces threatening our quality of life, finding the will to breathe, smile, work, learn, and love is a direct assault on the systemic forces designed to make life hard for us, if not impossible for us to live. Harriet Jacobs was actively resisting as she longed for her children through the hole in an attic wall. Joan Little was actively resisting when she killed the white guard who sexually assaulted her. Harriet Tubman was actively resisting as she led the raid on the Combahee River, from which the Combahee River Collective is named. The creators of the Combahee River Collective statement were actively resisting every time they met to discuss the issues and systems that plagued them in their everyday lives. And though these may seem like extreme examples of resistance, and you might be thinking, well, sure, those women are revolutionary, but what about me? You know, I may not have done any of that. I don't wake up every day thinking of ways to resist the system that I live in. I don't wake up every day thinking of ways that I can be a revolutionary. Well, I say that waking up this morning at all is an act of revolution and an act of resistance when systems have been put in place to combat your existence. Loving yourself wholeheartedly and unconditionally is an act of resistance in a world that hates you. Walking outside with a sense of pride is an act of resistance when the world is trying to convince you that you have something to be ashamed of. So this brings us to our fourth point, that every Black woman is a revolutionary, right? So what? What does this mean? What does this mean for us in the long run? Well, I do think that this is a really simple statement, but I think it could serve as a reminder to Black women everywhere who are dealing with the woes of the world, who feel unheard or unseen or unprotected. It could be a reminder that we have come a long way, but there is still a lot of work to do. And maybe if every Black woman begins to see themselves as a revolutionary, we could be motivated to further action. When people like Nathan Hare advocated for Black studies courses in universities, it was with the hopes that a new sense of self carried forward by knowledge would enable us to go back into our communities and impart real change, socioeconomically, politically, and even to inspire a new age of activism. And I think that with the knowledge that Black women are all revolutionaries, it can do much the same thing. A re-education of ourselves to see ourselves as we truly are is what we need. Black women are already ushering in a new age of not only survival, but thriving as well. And with proper knowledge of self, we could truly be unstoppable. And with that being said, I want to thank you, Dr. Lomax, for opening my eyes up and for teaching Black studies in a way that isn't male-centric, in a way that highlights more than just one view and more than just one opinion and more than just one lived experience. Because I have always felt that there was something truly inherently special about Black women in the way that we move throughout the world. But to have it acknowledged in such a professional academic setting is really, really important to me. And I think that it's important to all Black women and to everybody, really. Just like Nathan Hare was saying about Black studies, was that it wasn't just for Black people, but it was for Black people and white people, and it was for everybody, to re-educate everybody about what it means to be Black in the Black diaspora, in the Black experience. And I think that Black women need much of the same thing, a re-education about what it means to be a Black woman diasporically, you know, because our experiences are all so very similar. And I think that there needs to be more of a connection between us. And once we realize that we are all revolutionaries, once we stop seeing each other as just normal people going about our day, because we're not normal, we're survivors, we've always survived. And you can say that about every Black person in general, but I think it specifically applies to Black women, especially the way in which we move throughout the world and all the dangerous places that we inhabit, and yet we still find a way to survive and to thrive and to be alive, you know, and to enjoy that life, and not only that, but to pass it on to our daughters. And I think that that truly is something special that deserves more attention and deserves more recognition. So I want to thank you, Dr. Lomax, and the AAAS department for opening my eyes to that and for making me see that where I belong is telling the world, telling other Black women about how amazing the Black women are. And you inspired that. So thank you. So that is it for the final podcast. I hope that you enjoyed this episode today, and I hope that it was something that you maybe smiled while you were listening to it. And remember, the topic is that every Black woman is a revolutionary, and that is absolutely undeniable, inarguable, a fact of life at this point. And I hope that any Black woman who might listen to this can look in the mirror next time and look at herself and say, I am a revolutionary, just by being myself, just by being alive, just by loving myself unconditionally. And that was the hope for this. So thank you for listening. I hope you have a great summer, Dr. Lomax.